Hi, this is Sid Griffin of the Long Riders, and you're listening to Lee Williams.
Well, I left Texarkana, nothing but dust in my veins. In the month of Sundays, since I last felt the rain. Picked up my bags, hopped on a western bound dog. By dawn, okay city, covered in a blanket of fog. Pushed through Amarillo, where the wildflowers grow. Way past to come carry, lit out of New Mexico. Well, I don't have an answer, but I'll ask anyhow. Why she stayed behind, what is she doing right now? Step, chariot shifts to more gears. Look in the mirror, I'm going back 30 years. Cross the Colorado, know that I soon will be there. Sun says it needles, can't you feel that warm desert air? And when that sun begins to shine, that means we're on the California state line.
Sid Griffin on the Lee Williams Show. How you doing?
Lee, it's great to be here with you and your listeners. How you doing?
It's been a long time. Well, tell me all about it. You've got this new album out, Psychedelic Country Soul. It's the Long Riders reformed. Are they reformed or is it just a one-off?
Well, we'll see. I mean, it's very hard to reform, Lee, when I live over here in London, married to a Brit, and one guy lives in the East Coast, one guy lives in the West Coast, and the fourth member of the band lives almost in the middle of the country, near Chicago. So it's very hard to have a permanent band, as you can imagine.
Sure, sure.
I suppose, well, the reception's been so good to this record. I mean, it was the number one UK alt-country Americana album last week, and you know, in the official proper charts. And it's the number one, I just checked this morning, it's still the number one alt-country Americana sales thing on Amazon. So we're really laughing right now, but I don't know how to answer your question.
Well,
are we a band again? It's just, we'll see what happens. Pardon me for being hoarse. See what happens.
I mean, this is the first Long Riders album, what, 30 years?
33 years. I say 33 and a third, and a lot of people don't get the joke. You get it.
I do, yeah.
They go, what, I'm sorry, 33 and a third? Yeah, 33 and a third. You get it?
Yeah.
Look at me, no. Yes. Anyway.
And has it been released?
RPM, folks.
Yeah, and has it been released on vinyl?
Yes, it's on vinyl. You can buy a vinyl of Psychedelic Country Soul. In fact, it's on vinyl primarily out of the UK with a wonderful label called Cherry Red. Yeah. And what we did, this is interesting, it runs at 45 RPM, speaking of revolutions per minute, because that gives you a greater sonic reproduction. So it sounds terrific on vinyl, if you'll allow me to say so.
I must get Matt to send me a copy.
I mean, it sounds terrific on vinyl. I mean, it really does.
You have done so many other things as well. You know, you're a big bluegrass fan as well as
yes, I am.
An alt country, and I've followed you, and we've played your music
yes, you have.
Over the years and love it. So let's go back to, what, 1982 when the Long Riders were formed, and you got this alt country tag. Now, what was it at that time? Was it actually alt country at that time, or was it the
West
Coast?
Well, there was no such thing as alt country or Americana till, oh God, the late 80s, early 90s, I guess.
Well, that's what I thought,
So when we were existing as a band back in the day, we were just on our own. There was a band called Jason and the Nashville Scorchers who were in Nashville but hadn't broke nationally or been signed to a major, and they had the word Nashville in their name, which the record company made them lose. And there was a wonderful band in L.A. called Rank and File, whose first album on a label called Slash is just a classic. It's called Rank and File, named after the band. And other than that, I saw no one, and I mean no one, that was mixing straight country and western sounds with rock and roll. And, you know, it's just a weird thing we stumbled on. And no one was thinking, well, this will sell tons of records, because no one else was doing it. But what was popular at the time was synth pop with keyboards, what I call plastic keyboards, not like a Hammond B3 organ, which is a real thing to my mind, or a piano, which is a real thing to my mind, but those plastic, very lightweight keyboards that you can program and carry around under your arm, they're very lightweight. That was extremely popular. So we were going against the grain. So there was no, in answer to your question, there was no alt country, no Americana, no nothing.
Of course, at that time, obviously, Gram Parsons, Sir Doug Sahm, and sort of...
But no one knew who those guys were, particularly in the United Kingdom.
No.
The United Kingdom was... No one knew who Sir Doug was.
No one. No.
I mean, you did, and that guy, Rob Partridge, who's no longer with us, who was the publicist at Island, he was a fan. You could count on both hands the number of people, when I'd said the Sir Douglas Quintet or the Texas Tornadoes, who in the United Kingdom knew who they were. Bizarrely, Doug's always been popular in Germany and Scandinavia and the Benelux territories. But in France, Spain, Italy, no one knew who Doug was. And Graham, every time I said Graham Lee, they thought I was talking about Graham Parker. So it was dominated by... it was dominated by Soft Cell and Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark and Spandau Ballet and Duran Duran and so on and so forth. And, you know, good for them. I'm not knocking those people. It's just not my kind of tunes. So we were definitely, definitely swimming upstream.
So how hard was it to get gigs and get audiences when it first started?
That's a great question. At first it was very hard because when we came up in L.A. around, I think we formed at Thanksgiving, which is November 1981, so 82, 83, that first year and a half, it was tough. I remember doing gigs to 15 people, and I remember it slowly starting to turn in our favor. In late 1983, we released an EP of five songs called 10-560, which is actually a song title, 10-560. Mm-hmm. And that was good. That brought the audiences bigger, but they weren't anything more than 100 people at various clubs and 150 people on a good night. So it was very hard at first because people didn't know what we were doing. And then when, bizarrely, we did the opposite thing of what we should have done, looking back, we upped the country and western quotient, which seemed to be what was confusing people. And I'm talking about primarily young people who were raised on sort of the Ramones and the Clash and things like that and weren't familiar with country and western. And then, of course, the synth pop, which is so popular at the time. Why we thought we'd increase the country and western, I don't really quite remember, but we did. And bizarrely, that now made us unique and different and got us an audience. And by the next time we made recording, we recorded an album called Native Sons, which increased the country element and decreased some of the more psychedelic element, if you will. I mean, that was very well received and sold about 35,000 copies in the USA, which is very good for an independent record on a small label. But that first year and a half was tough. I'll tell you what, I distinctly remember we recorded. We did a gig, Lee, in L.A., and we got $15. I distinctly remember that, and I'll try and remember the club in a minute, but I can't. $15. All that going through traffic, setting up, all that, $15. I, for one, not that this makes me a great guy, I never boo or poo-poo an act live on stage when I go. I can maybe ignore them, I suppose, and but I don't talk during their performance, and I don't, in the early days of the Longriders, you know, people would give you the finger or the two fingers over here, and every once in a while somebody might throw something because your music's alien. That kind of behavior, even if it's a band playing music I can't stand, I cannot handle that kind of behavior. It's so rude to the artist. Because I, even if it's like one of these synth pop bands, the viewer and the listener and the audience member has to realize that's these people's dream. So don't disparage their dream. The fact that you don't like that kind of music or that particular band, just leave them be and ignore them.
Yeah, and I can't understand people that spend a fortune to go to a big gig and then talk all the way through it, you know?
Yeah, that's one of my bugbears is people, particularly acoustic gigs. I don't have it so much because I have a nice reputation, so I don't, you know, I can do an intimate gig and there's 55 people at some crazy folk club. I don't, you know, they don't talk. They're here.
No, that's true.
They pay strict attention. Yeah. But it freaks me out when they talk during the opening act or talk during. One of my friends played upstairs at the Garage here in London, and her friends all showed up, and she was all excited. I saw her friends, saw them, much less heard them, talking through her gig. I thought it was breathtakingly rude. Yeah. Breathtakingly rude.
Yeah. Tell me a couple of the songs. Some of the songs are on this album. Obviously, you've written them all.
I didn't write all of them. I wrote about half of them. The other band members wrote them. And there is a cover, now that I think about it, of Tom Petty's Walls. And I thought we were being very clever because Petty saw the Longriders play twice. And, Lee, I was really touched. Once, I don't know what this, there was a snafu or something, and he had to pay to get in, which he readily did. So that was great that Petty went to see us twice. So I thought we'd do a tribute to him because he died not long before the sessions started. And we looked for a song to play, and we settled on Walls. And little did I know that two other people have covered it. The late Glenn Campbell did a fine version a few years before he died. And then there's some indie folk band in America that did a tribute after Tom died of the same song, which I didn't realize till we'd already cut our version. So there's, I think it's 12 songs. There's 11 originals by the Longriders and one cover of Tom Petty's Walls. We're very pleased with the album. I think there's no clunkers on it. I guess all your audience knows what I mean by that. There's not one song on it that I listen to and go, ooh, with a slight wince. And that's rare any artist can say that. I mean, even the Beatles, even Lennon and McCartney talked about hearing back records like Revolver and thinking, oh, that's not very good. We could have done that better. So that's great when you have an album like Psychedelic Country Soul and there's 12 songs on it, and each song, I think, is valid, and we did it justice. I'm very proud of that. Hi, this is Sid Griffin of the Longriders, and you're listening to Lee Williams.
Some days are rocks. Some doors are open.
I never do nothing, I'll get you back someday. Cause you've got a heart so big that it can crush this town. I can't hold out forever, even walls fall down. All around your island there's a barricade, keeps out the danger, holds in the pain. Sometimes you're happy, sometimes you cry. Half of me is ocean and half of me is sky. But you've got a heart so big that it could crush this town. And I can't hold out forever, even walls fall down.
Soon.
We play 4 gigs in April in the United Kingdom, then we go over to the continent for another 12 gigs, then we play some festivals in the summer, then in September we do North America for 3.5 weeks, maybe 4 weeks, and then in late, around mid-October to mid-November, we do a month in Europe. So everyone's asking me, why aren't those dates closer to the release of the album? And the reason is twofold. One is because this band didn't have booking agents and all that. We had to go get them. And to get a good booking agent, we had to play the record once it was made. So normally you'd release a record, I guess you know this, maybe your listeners don't. Normally you'd release a record in like a week or 2 weeks later, you'd tour behind it. And we're doing a little slight lag because we had to reset up the entire apparatus of touring and promoters and booking agents one more time. But we will do 4 gigs in April in the UK and come back in October and do a more extensive run in Britain. I think we're doing 9 gigs in the UK in October or November. Good. And then in the summer, we're doing some festivals. Don't ask me which ones yet, because I haven't signed off on them, but it looks like we'll be doing two or three.
Okay, well, let's look at the English dates first, and that's going to be the Manchester Gorilla on the 10th of April, Nottingham Rescue Rooms on the 11th, the 12th of April, the Engine Rooms in Southampton, and I probably will come down to that one, because that's...
Good. I hope to see you there. Let me know.
That's good for me. And 13th of April, London Islington Assembly Hall, another great venue.
And the booking agent, my dear friend, Mr. Neil O'Brien, says they're all going to sell out. He says there's no, the early ticket sales are so strong, they're all going to sell out. So I would encourage anybody, if you want to see the Long Riders, please buy a ticket sooner rather than later. I kid you not, they're going to sell out.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's such a historic band and such great music that you produced, and it was so different to what everybody else was doing, like you said, you know, it's
yeah, it was very different at the time, and now you know, after the band broke up, there was I guess 10 years where not that many people were interested in the Long Riders legacy or whatever. And around the millennium, an album, a two CD set came out, no vinyl, a two CD set came out on Polygram or Polydor USA called Anthology, and that somehow, that collection of our best songs, it's out of print now as I recall, but somehow that lit the fire, and more interest, you know, every few years there was more and more interest in what the Long Riders were up to. So finally in 2004 we did our first reunion tour after 17 years apart, and then we didn't do anything for about 4 or 5 years. We don't play very often, quite frankly. So you kind of got to see us when we're out there.
But you're always busy doing bluegrass and that type
of
stuff.
Yeah, I love bluegrass. I love country and western music. You know, it's funny. People tell me it must be your favorite kind of music. And in a way, I think my favorite kind of music, Lee, is Chicago blues, like Muddy Waters and Howlin' Wolf. But I sound like such a white, wimpy guy when I play it and sing it. You know, I really just sound like a sissy, so I don't do it publicly. But when I play country and western or bluegrass, I'm looking at my mandolin and my banjo right now as I say those words. It's funny enough. I don't sound like a phony, if you'll allow me to say that on the air.
Yeah.
I mean, when I play bluegrass with the Cole Porters, C-O-A-L, folks, like a chunk of coal. When I play bluegrass with the Cole Porters, it sounds authentic. No one could say he's faking it. So that's, you know, it just I don't know, it rings truer. Maybe because I'm from Kentucky, it's somehow in my DNA, if you know what I'm saying.
Looking forward to seeing you down in Southampton on the 12th of April.
Thanks, Lee.
We'll play lots of this music for you, and good luck for the future.
All right, sir, thanks for calling. This is great. I look forward to seeing you and having all the listeners at a gig.
That's great. Thanks, Sid. Thank you very much.
Hi, this is Sid Griffin of the Long Riders, and you're listening to Lee Williams.
Summer slipped away, autumn falling. Blue jay in the distance keeps on calling. It harder to fall down.
Falling down.
I always hope she'd be there.
Hope she'd be there.
But she's not around.
Not around.
She said, make a wish and let it fly. And make a wish and let it fly. Sun is going down inside my head. What's wrong? I thought something that I said.
Falling,
like flowers from a tree.
to the wind and let it